Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Bree. And it's nice to be here this week in the studio, ready to have a conversation. We're going to follow up on the conversation I had last Tuesday with Dr. Kelly Brogan about her book, A Mind of Your Own, The Truth About Depression and How Women Can Heal Their Bodies and Reclaim Their Lives. So I'm hoping that you had a chance to hear last week's show, or maybe grab the book, or even think about this idea of rethinking our relationship or our understanding about mental health and depression and anxiety. And I'm not just talking to women today, although the book is addressed towards women. I think this conversation applies to every one of us. But what's interesting about women in mental health is that women are 5 times more likely to be prescribed an antidepressant than men. Across the board, women have been the experimental lab rats when it comes to mental health since our friends Freud and Jung got started doing analysis, and they first started diagnosing women with hysteria. So we have a long history of using women as our litmus test for different treatments when it comes to mental health. And as we'll talk about today, what's interesting about that is that women are the emotion workers. You know, not across the board. You know, men and women carry the qualities of feminine and masculine. We carry both inside of us. But for most women, they tend to carry the heavier emotion side of the life experience, and men tend to keep more of the resource working part of the emotional experience. They tend to handle things from a much more business mind approach, and women tend to be the ones in charge of the emotional lives of their family and themselves. And because we have these complex emotional radars, we tend to be the ones that are on the front line in dealing with things that cause disruptions in our moods, going through, you know, our different cycles, our hormonal cycles, starting from the time we're young. They do change our moods throughout our lives. Postpartum, you know, adjusting to life after having children, that's a huge disruption in our lives. And it's not to say that because we are more hormonal that women are unstable. See, that's the big dirty secret. It has nothing to do with stability. It has to do with, because women aren't men, and for a long period of history, men have been in charge of medical health. They can't apply what men understand about how men respond to life to how women respond to life. And we have a long history of trying to apply what men expect reactions to be to how women respond to different things in life. Just as a side note, because I can go down this rabbit hole so quickly, I won't even introduce the show. But there was a study done when they were researching, there was research done about how people develop their sense of moral, their moral compass. And so they did some studies about asking young people about how they would respond if someone stole bread to feed their starving family. And the young men in the group, you know, across the board, kind of law and order, the majority of them said, oh, he should pay for the crime. Even, you know, stealing is wrong. Even if it's to feed a hungry family, he should go to prison. A little bit of the Les Miserables story. But when they started looking at this research and they looked at the responses of women, it was a much more nuanced response about whether or not this was a moral or ethical dilemma or if the person should serve time in jail. The women looked at the whole experience, not just the right or wrong, but they said, well, what about, you know, the society's responsibility in making sure that this man's family had food? And what about his own history as a child? Maybe he came from a family that didn't have food, and so he was compelled to, you know, to steal to keep his family alive. Women's brains respond to emotional situations differently. And again, let's not get caught up with every woman and every man responding the same. But when we look at, you know, a large spectrum of how men and women respond to things, women, for the most part, are going to have a much more nuanced emotional response to life than men are. And I hope I get to tell my story about my weekend and my trip to the emergency room with my husband, because that will also help to flesh out how men and women approach situations in life so differently. So although the conversation isn't just about women's mental health today, because so much of our experimentation with how to treat mental health has been focused on women, a lot of the conversation in Kelly Brogan's book are aimed towards women. But this does count across the board for all of us. So this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I am Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you for joining me each Tuesday at 2 o'clock for this conversation. I will be opening the phone lines at any time, 805-781-3875, because I know that I talked about giving you an opportunity to respond to my conversation with Kelly Brogan last week, your thoughts about, you know, her position as a psychiatrist and her refusal to write any sort of prescriptions for any sort of medications for mental health, and how she's changed her entire perspective on how we need to treat mental health, depression, anxiety, OCD, postpartum in women. So the phone lines are open, 805-781-3875. For those of you who didn't get a chance to listen last week or to grab the book, I'll give you a little, I'll kind of reset the story for today. But I'm really looking forward to hearing from you about how do we process information that's so counter to what we've been told to be true for the last 20 years. Because for 20 years, we've been told that we can take a pill to cure or heal just about any sort of human affliction. And we're finding out rapidly that most all of those stories are myth, that we haven't cured mental health with a pill. And we've also found that hormone replacement therapy and the use of statins and a lot of our over-the-counter medications are actually doing us more harm than good. And so how do we wrap our heads around this idea that what we've been believing would help us get better is actually making us worse? So if you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in. As always, you can find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can like our page and keep up with the shows and find out topics, and you'll know to read a book that's coming up so we can chat about it. You can follow us on our Instagram account at The Reluctant Therapist. You can always email me to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Love to hear from you. Love to know what's going on or what resonated with you or where you might have a question. And I know that it's can be overwhelming, a little anxiety provoking to make a phone call and call in. But if you want to call and ask your question to Bree, she's always happy to pass it on to me. So if you're a little nervous about coming on the air, we still want to hear from you, because I think Bree is comfortable responding to and putting your questions out there for us. Is that fair?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure you're ready to go. So let me set up a little bit my conversation last week. Dr. Kelly Brogan, she is a holistic psychiatrist. She is an MD with training from MIT. She went to Weill Cornell Medical School. She did her training at NYU. She has a private practice in Manhattan. And she spent 10 years writing prescriptions every single day in her practice for anxiety and depression. And she kind of came upon a health crisis of her own, and the doctor that she went to quickly wanted to write a prescription, I think it was for Hashimoto's thyroid disorder, that she would be on for the rest of her life. And she had that aha moment where she thought, I don't want to be on a medication for the rest of my life. Why is that the only option? And why aren't we talking about all the other factors in my life that could have contributed to Hashimoto's instead of just attacking the symptoms of this disease? So this started her on a 10-year quest to kind of look at the practices that she'd bought into and felt very strongly about supporting as a psychiatrist. And she researched day and night and looking at studies and research that kind of was buried. And her takeaway was to realize that when what we thought we knew about depression was wrong, that it's not It's not a chemical imbalance. It's not a serotonin depletion. It's not a disease. That most of what she believes causes us to struggle with mood disorders is related to the gut, to inflammation. This inflammation and distress in the gut, this imbalance in the body, that depression and anxiety and OCD are all messages from the body saying, hey, something's not okay. And it's the body's way of trying to alert us to take action. And so she changed her life. She started meditating and exercising. She went from living on sugar and Red Bulls and starving to eating whole foods, holistic, you know, eating more healthy organic foods, bringing back meat and healthy fats into her body. Because as women, we know we've been starved for the last 30 years with these low fat, low nutrition based diets. And we wonder why our reproductive systems are shutting down. And we wonder why our anxiety level is so high. And so she changed her life. And then after her 10 years of changing her life, she's written this book. But it's a fundamental change, right? She's saying that everything her profession has said is going to make people better is bunk, and that we need to move away from that model and start approaching mental health and well-being from a more whole person perspective. So did you get a chance to read it, or what do you think about that? And we're going to talk some more. Suzanne, why don't you start us off? Thanks for calling in today. Are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me what's on your mind today. Thanks for calling in.
Well, this is my story. I could have written this book. I spent many years working as a nurse, and I did believe in the medical field and medical thought. The pill is the cure for everything.
Suzanne, I think
psychological reasons for that depression.
Mm-hmm.
So after taking every pill that they had, and eventually my body broke down, I became so ill I couldn't keep anything down. So I had to cold turkey all medication, and I dropped down to about 80 pounds. I was given 6 months to live. Mm. My liver had stopped functioning. My digestive system had completely stopped functioning. So my husband wouldn't give up. So he dragged me around to alternative treatments. And I had some success with that. The biggest success was that brought me back some spirit. And then I went on my own journey. Mm-hmm. And through a lot of lay counseling that I found on my own, and I've done my own work, I am a much different person. I also had to clean up my diet completely, go to organic foods, and no gluten was a huge problem. And I'm alive, glad to be alive.
And Suzanne, how long ago was this? How long have you been feeling better? Oh, I'm not hearing Suzanne. I'm sorry, Suzanne, I'm going to have her call back because I'm not hearing her on this part of the phone call. Suzanne, try to call me back and maybe we can get a more stable line because I would really like to hear more of your story. Bree, if you could watch for Suzanne when she calls back. And I'm so glad that Suzanne started us off today because her story is not unique. In Kelly Brogan's book, she tells a lot of stories of women who went in postpartum, you know, 6 weeks after having a child, and instead of having their experience of feeling blue and overwhelmed and tired normalized as, yeah, you can expect to feel like this for quite a while after you have a child because you're changing fundamentally, not just, you know, hormonally in your body, but your life is never going to be the same. You have a human being you're responsible for. You're still expected to get up and go to work in a lot of cases. And so if you're feeling depressed or anxious, that would be a normal response. So how can we best help to support you? You know, how do we get your nutrition in line? How do we get your lifestyle in a way that is somehow manageable? And to me, the key part is how do we help you to cope with the depression, anxiety, the frustration, the overwhelm, the suffering or that you might feel, that's a part of our human experience. Because I think underneath all of these feelings or these experiences, or even the way we're responding as a culture, is that we have become fundamentally phobic about suffering and pain. And that we have been sold not only the story that a pill can make us better, or that there, you know, is an easy way to get through life. We've been sold a story that we're supposed to only feel happy all the time. And we talk about that all the time here. I mean, that comes up often in our conversations, that this idea that we're supposed to only feel happy is a setup for being miserable. Because everyone goes through periods of time in their life when they're miserable, or something horrible happens, or they go through a period of grief. That is natural and normal, but we've been sold the story that we should always feel good. Therefore, we should take a pill when we feel terrible, or we should have a drink when we're feeling blue, or that we should, buy whatever we want to make us feel better. That it's always about chasing the happy, the tail of the tiger that's going to make us happy. And then when we're not happy, it drives us down the hole. So Suzanne's story and the story of a lot of the women in Dr. Brogan's book is the same, that they went in with a natural response to a life circumstance and were told, you shouldn't have to feel this way, or how you're feeling is sick and disordered, so we're going to write you a prescription. And then that one prescription leads to another prescription to another prescription. So 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation today. I guess I'm going to start with, again, last week, the conversation with Dr. Brogan. I know that I'm throwing out there something that flies in the face of what, many people have been told to be true. So I figured I want to give you a chance to have your say. But I also want to say that, my experience as an adult has been a long process of unlearning everything I'd ever taught to be true, most things that I was taught to be true. I remember being put on my first diet when I was 12 years old because, the norm at that time, I didn't fit that norm. And so there were all these programs because we needed to stay at a certain weight, or, there was the normal that I was supposed to fit in. And that kind of started my lifetime struggle with up and down with food and my relationship with food, and then a lot of anxiety and then depression that comes in, and, a lot of programs that were going to make me better and chasing a lot of different, whatever the new thing was. And it wasn't until, I was in my 30s, maybe later, if I look back on it, that I started to realize that it wasn't me. It was all these programs I was told were going to make me better. And when I let go of all the programs or all of the, the ideals of what was normal for me, I actually started to get better. And I started to really enjoy my life. And I started to really be curious about, how much better I could actually feel. And so for me, this unlearning much of what I was taught to believe to be true helped me gain confidence, enough confidence and success when things went well, that I could trust my gut again. Because I'd been taught from a young age not to trust my gut, not to trust what my mind was saying was good for me, because experts knew better. And when I started to have success listening to what I had researched or what I felt would be in my best interest, and my psyche improved, I started to realize that much of what I've learned about caring for myself really only applies to me. That the struggle really for all of us is that there is no one set normal. There is no one set plan. And that's the problem with our medical model and trying to address mental health today, because we keep thinking that there's one treatment plan that's going to help everyone get better. But that's not the way that it works. That we're much more complex, that our psyches are much more complex. And so we have to, at some point, as Suzanne was saying, is that we have to take responsibility for ourselves. So Suzanne, I guess you're back. Let's try this again. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. So what I was kind of going off of what you said, that at some point you had to learn how to trust yourself and do your own healing. How long have you been successful in feeling good?
I've been feeling it's gradual, because I was so low and so far down there. It's been a very gradual, difficult process. But I am Oh, goodness. I mean, I know other people who think they're well, and I think I feel better than they do. Mm-hmm. So I've come a long way.
And what if what have been a couple things that you've learned about yourself that surprised you?
That everyone else's so-called wisdom is not always right for me. Mm-hmm. I had to learn to trust myself and listen to my voice and what my body and my little quiet thoughts were trying to teach me.
Beautifully said. And anything else you want to share?
Don't give up. I would like to share that with everyone. Don't give up. Healing can be done, no matter how deep or dark your history is. Mine was extremely dark. And it can come out the other side. It just is a crawl, and then get to your knees, and you may stumble and fall again a little bit, but you will keep getting better if you keep working at it.
And so did you find that counseling at some point was helpful also in your recovery and your healing?
I actually took classes, because that's what medical people do. Mm-hmm. I took classes, and I became a lay counselor.
So you literally
started out with myself. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how a lot of counselors become counselors, right? Is kind of giving up on what they're being told to do and going to find the healing for themselves, that you literally have to be almost your own healer.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And also, so with your nutrition, and I would imagine you picked up more diet, exercise and meditation. I mean, all of that's kind of wound into it.
Yes, I do. I started doing meditation to calm my nervous system, because my nervous system was really unhappy. Mm-hmm. I started walking other people's dogs, and I reaffirmed my love of animals. I do dog walking in my neighborhood and dog sitting for fun, just because I love it, although they pay me. Mm-hmm. And I adopted 2 X-racing greyhounds and found a wonderful cat that chose me in a kind of a rural area that was starving. I have a house full of animals, and my husband's happy. And do I have dark days and moments? Yes, I do. But I will write about it. I will throw rocks if I need to in a safe place. And I will work it through.
Well, and I think that that's always the takeaway, is that there is no healing where you never feel bad again, because the whole process, if you get the opportunity to be alive long enough, you will probably have as many traumas and grief experiences as joyful experiences. And knowing how to find your way out the other side really is the key.
I agree with that.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thanks for calling us back.
All right. Thank you.
This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our phone lines are open today, 805-781-3875. We're talking about, how do we revision mental health? How do we take back our own well-being in the face of a system, an industry? I don't even know, the mental health industrial complex, which has become so large and so powerful with the help of our big pharma and managed care, and also my own profession's mad desire in the late 70s to become more validated as a reasonable profession, and trying to align ourselves with the medical profession and become just another medical model has hurt us, because we lost what made the work of psychotherapy helpful, which was the relationship with our psyche and the nuanced ways our psyche work. And so I'd love to hear from you, 805-781-3875. If you wanted to hear last week's conversation, you can go to our website, kcbx.org, under the News Talk tab is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and all of our shows are there. You can also go to iTunes and podcast our show. If you know how to work that part, you can subscribe or just listen to episodes that way. And if you have any questions on how to grab one of our episodes, you can call Bree, and she'll be happy to walk you through it too, 781-3875. But there are a lot of ways that you can hear our previous shows and download and keep them with you. So, and I, before I go too far down the rabbit hole, I want to say that I am happy and thankful for the Western medicine perspective when it comes to anything that has to do with an injury, right? I don't want to sound like someone who's completely anti all of our Western medicine and the things that we've been able to do that are amazing. Because yesterday, last night, the evening, my husband and I took a trip to the emergency room. Thank you, Arroyo Grande Hospital, because he injured his arm doing some yard work. And so I was happy that I could take him there and they could x-ray and make sure that it wasn't a broken arm and help him kind of get, you know, cleaned up and back home feeling like he can heal. I'm thankful for that because I want to be able to have help in healing my physical structure. I believe that our bodies are the homes where our psyche, our soul, our, my essence, my spirit lives inside of this home that I'm so happy that there are people who can help me maintain my home. But when it comes to issues of my psyche, my soul, I don't believe that you can apply the same tools used to keep my, you know, machinery operating that we can in healing emotional trauma or grief. They're not the same. We can't keep, you know, utilizing the same tools to try to mend a broken heart or a grief-stricken heart or a traumatized psyche that we do on a broken arm. You know, the medical model does a great job addressing symptoms, just like a contractor. If you have a leak in your house somewhere, they can, you know, cover up that hole and stop the leak. But unless the contractor goes in and finds the source of that leak and it's not addressed, then this ongoing festering or leak under the house is going to turn into long-term damage like mold or dry rot that will eventually compromise the entire structure. But it's not that simple when you try to apply that model to mental health. You know, yes, we experience a trauma or a grief, and if we, you know, might find some relief for a period of time with the medication, but unless we go in and help the psyche to heal from the trauma or have the time and space to heal from it, then how will we, you know, ever really rebuild the structure of the soul? 805-781-3875. Thomas, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Sure. I just, you probably have heard of a medical institution called the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota?
Yes.
Well, when I was in college, a very close friend of mine did not come back to school my junior year, and I was extremely heartbroken, and I started to fall into, I guess you might call depression, but for the first time in my life, I started to get consistent and very severe migraine headaches along with deep, deep depression. Mm-hmm. And the headaches never would not go away. It would be a constant headache from the time I woke up till the time I went to sleep. I was also in a great deal of depression. And I had spoken to a number of psychologists and medical doctors, and nothing seemed to work. I went through a week of tests at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. This is about 30 years ago, and they tried everything on me from biofeedback to brain scans, and, you know, they checked if there was a tumor, and they did everything. And so finally, they tried Elavil to help control the migraine headaches. And then after graduation, I moved to Minneapolis. And the migraines were under control with the Elavil. And after moving to California about 26 years ago, I married and I lost a job. And I started to get these terrible, terrible feelings of depression. I went to a psychologist who was very good, and these feelings of depression got worse and worse and worse. my wife at the time was not very, she didn't really understand it. Her feelings was, you're a man, and so you should not be depressed. Well, nothing the psychologist could do to help me, though he was very good, and he referred me to a very respected psychiatrist. She prescribed Zoloft, and I've been on that since. And this is about 20 years ago. And I can tell you that for many, many people, antidepressants are really the only way to survive and function and work in society. Now, there may be some people that alternatives to antidepressants may work, but I assure you that I am not one of those people. And I just wanted to say that.
No, Thomas, and I appreciate your call. And it's interesting because Dr. Brogan said the same thing, that if you're someone who finds relief in the medical model and it works for you, then that's where you should be. I mean, you know, she did not say, you know, everyone needs to follow her way as the only way. So I think that's an important...
I know, but I'm just saying is that there are a lot of people out there hearing what you've been discussing over the last 2 days that may say that, well, antidepressants are just a scam, or it's a way that the medical industry or the drug industry is making money, and they may feel that, well, psychiatrists who prescribe this are just taking their $200 an hour or $300 an hour, and they may not take their antidepressants that were prescribed to them, and nobody wants people to kill themselves because they stopped taking their antidepressants. So somebody should really be very cautious when they speak about people not needing antidepressants. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you, Thomas. And I do appreciate that, and I will back up a little bit and talk about, I'm not saying stop taking antidepressants, because that would be absolutely dangerous to do, because what we found out about being on antidepressants for a long period of time is that trying to come off of them is more dangerous than how you felt before you went on them, because our body becomes so addicted to the antidepressant that there is what this... Big Pharma calls it is a syndrome, a chronic withdrawal syndrome, where you have worse symptoms coming off of these psychotropic drugs than you had going into them. So please, yes, if anyone's listening and taking antidepressants, don't stop, because you need to be tapered with a medical profession off of them. And you know, and I'm not saying that this is the answer for everyone, but one of the things I would have asked Thomas was, how did the nutritional piece work for you? Because I think that one of the reasons I, you know, liked what Kelly Brogren had to say is, one, she didn't say this is for everybody and every person it'll work for. She said, this is what worked for me. I think what Suzanne was saying is that we have to find the path to healing that works for us. That's really the takeaway, is that we all have to do our own unlearning about what we thought was going to be true for us and learn what is true for us. And if it is a course of antidepressants for the rest of your life, then that... and that works for you, then that's where you should be. But for the people who have this gut feeling that this really isn't the way I should live, then what about the nutritional piece of it? What about our gut lining? What about inflammation? What about the pages and pages and hundreds of studies showing that inflammation impacts our moods? It's about doing our research, but absolutely not throwing away what's been working for us right now to jump on another bandwagon, because not that, you know, Kelly Brogan's just a bandwagon, but she is just another professional. She is just another expert saying, here is what my expert experience is. It's on each of us as individuals to find our truth and to be responsible for that. 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about revisioning mental health Could there be something as simple, not as simple, but could it be that our lifestyle, the toxins in our systems, the food that we're eating, the exercise we're not getting, and the day-to-day stress that we're experiencing really is the drivers of our moods and not the other way around? That our moods are not making us sick, but our lifestyle is creating depression and anxiety. Dan, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Well, Elizabeth, I want to first off just thank you for the great show that you put on. I was able to listen to the whole thing last week. I was driving back from San Francisco, and it really, really hit home with me. And I wanted to just kind of share my experience a little bit of having found my way. And I do appreciate the disclaimers there, because it sounds like, you know, where Thomas is working for him.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to offer anybody any advice. But,
absolutely.
I'm a male in my 50s, and I had about a five-year period where I was just really experiencing low energy, and I did not feel good, but I couldn't really pinpoint exactly what was wrong with me. And my doctor ordered all sorts of tests, everything from sleep studies to, you know, blood tests, vitamin deficiencies, whatnot, and basically said there was nothing wrong with me. Couldn't find anything wrong with me, but I just knew that I didn't feel right. And at some point, I started on a plant-based diet, thinking that that might help me, and just really kind of trying to watch what I ate. And that did make a difference, but it didn't really, really quite fix it and everything. And just growing up, I think being a guy in our American Western society, you know, you're supposed to have certain standards and behave certain ways and, you know, not be emotional and that sort of thing. So I made the decision this past January that, you know, maybe there was something psychologically wrong with me. So I started seeing a therapist, and it made all the difference in the world for me. And basically, I had just been stuffing down my emotions for my whole life, and I had gone into a mild depression because of it. And basically at the point that I'm at now, I'm exercising regularly, I'm eating a plant-based diet, I'm seeing a therapist still, I am going to Al-Anon, and I have just really turned my life around. And I just want to say, I'm somebody who did not want to be on medication for the rest of my life. I did also have a cholesterol problem and some other issues that have all since completely gone away, through my diet and everything else. So I guess I just wanted to offer that up, as an experience, that just really hit home with what you were talking about last week.
Dan, I appreciate you calling in. I can hear a little nervous in your voice too, so I appreciate your courage in calling in and sharing your story, because we have to hear all the stories. We have to hear the stories that counter what we're being told is the truth, because if we don't hear from people who've had success, you know, curing or healing themselves through lifestyle changes, we're going to continue feeling like our only path is through the medical model. So I applaud you for having the courage to take your life in your own hands. And I think what's interesting about, you know, the being a man in our society and having to stuff down feelings and be a man, and I think Thomas talked about that also, that he was, you know, his wife at the time said you shouldn't be feeling depressed, so maybe those feelings just had to get stuffed, and then we moderate symptoms, right, for life, because it's a scary thing to actually feel those feelings. My hope is that the further down the path we get, the more we open up the emotional realm for men to feel all the feelings and to be able to express them, because I think ultimately that'll help them have more empathy for the women in their lives, you know, and to be able to nurture each other's emotional lives. And then we'll have less of this kind of chronic low-level depression. Because in all honesty, Dan, I think that most people live their life in some sort of low level of depression. Stay-at-home moms feel it because they wonder if they should be staying home full time. You know, I should be out working. Working mothers feel it because they wonder if they should be home full time. Men feel it because they wonder if, you know, they could be doing more of themselves. I mean, then all of us low level are wondering, should we be doing something to help the planet? Should we be at Standing Rock Reservation protesting, right? Instead of going to our job? Or it's like, I think we all struggle with low level sense of depression because our gut is always calling out to us, you know, hey, are we living right?
Yeah, I get that. And I think you're doing a service, and I think society needs to reflect upon itself, though. I think we're in such a fast-paced society, and everybody wants a quick fix. And if you can just take a pill and everything is better, and the doctor's only got 5 minutes to talk to you and doesn't want to spend a lot of time with you figuring out what's wrong. And I just think so much of this is tied together. If everybody just takes a pill for the rest of their life, it's just a quick fix and it's easy. You don't have to work on anything. You don't have to have a daily routine or anything. So I guess, I applaud you for pointing that out to people. And I guess I feel just lucky or blessed that I've been able to figure out as much as I have. I feel like I still have a long way to go, but I'm heading in the right direction. So,
well, and the beautiful thing, Dan, if I leave you with anything, is to trust that you'll never get to a place, you'll go through periods of time where you're just feeling great like you are now. But the most powerful thing is that you know that if you dip down into that dark space again, you can get back to this place because you have the tools and the skills. And sometimes in our life, we just have to live in the dark depths because things happen. We experience trauma. We experience grief. We experience loss. And we're going to go to that dark space. But if you keep eating your healthy way and exercising, that helps your body's resilience in dealing with the grief. And so you have the tools now, and you'll be able to deal with anything that comes your way.
Yep, I think you're right.
Thanks for calling in, Dan. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're talking about mental health because that's what we do every Tuesday at 2. You can be part of our conversation at 805-781-3875. You can find us on our Facebook page. You can always call and ask your question or through Bree if you feel a little nervous about coming on the air. And so let me throw a couple things out to stir the pot even more. So I have this conversation with Kelly Brogan last week. And then, of course, I start thinking about this week. And, you know, I have a bookcase full of books from the last 20 years, all talking about medications and the push by Big Pharma. And I don't think that there are evil people trying to hurt us through meds. I think the intention is always, we want to help people. We want to find cures. We don't want people to suffer. So I understand the intention. I don't believe the medical model is evil. And again, as I said, when I was dragging my husband into the emergency room last night, I was happy they were there. And I loved the medical professionals we worked with last night. But it's interesting because, you know, my husband was in a lot of pain. He thought his arm was broken. I just kept looking at him saying, breathe and slow down. Let's work this out. And he's like, no, I'm in pain. And so they immediately came out and said, what kind of pain relief can we get for you? Let's get the pain relief. And I immediately said, no opiates, because we're not going to go down that route unless he absolutely needs them. And so I had a conversation with the doctor, and he was telling me that in the last few months, there's been a lot of information coming into their medical practice saying, let's not go to opiates first. We're not going to, refill prescriptions, that there's a lot of awareness of the dangers of the benzos and opiates and, this epidemic of addiction that we are experiencing right now because of misuse of many prescription medications. But I was happy they were there last night. But I do want to say that, in the course of my lifetime, a lot of things that were supposed to be fabulous for us turned out not to be true. Take, for example, antibacterial soaps. Now, that just was in the news also in the last week or so, that the FDA has now required that antibacterial chemicals be taken out of soaps because not only is it not really helpful, it's harmful. And it's something that we should have known at our gut level. Why would I wipe out all of the healthy bacteria in my body? How will my immune system ever operate if I'm wiping, if I'm trying to make myself sanitized? But here it is 20-something years later, 15 years later, how many people have been using antibacterial soaps religiously, and every time they go into a room and they're using the antibacterial sanitizers, are having heart palpitations thinking, oh my gosh, I've been doing this for 20 years. And now I find out it's bad for me. That's a horrible place to be. Or what about margarine? A horrible chemical that's, terrible for your body, and it prevented us from using good fats like olive oils and ghees and organic butters. What about diet soda that was supposed to be the thing that saved us from sugary-laced sodas, but then the fake sugar in the diet soda is causing, cancer? What about low-fat foods and statins? It goes on and on and on, that when we just trust that there is some grand guru out there who's looking after our best interest, we're fooling ourselves, because there really isn't anyone in charge. There's a lot of corporations with a lot of money, and there's a lot of oversight, maybe not as much as there should be because of budget cuts. The FDA tries to catch what they can. I mean, there are processes in charge. But, there really is not one grand Poobah, who knows, you know, what's healthy and best for us and is going to make sure we're always safe. That's not out there. So when I think one of the struggles with this conversation is that if you're someone who's bought into that medical model, or you have, you know, been finding yourself on the other end of using antibacterial soaps or taking antidepressants or taking antibiotics over and over again and not realizing that you're not just taking the antibiotics to attack some part of your body, but the antibiotic ruined your gut biome. And so now your gut's messed up for, you know, weeks and weeks post the antibiotics. If you're someone who's found yourself in that place, you don't want to hear this story because that's overwhelming, right? That is destabilizing to find out that something you thought was good for you has been horrible for you. And so our first reaction is to deny it and push it back. Well, that can't be true. I don't want to hear that information. But then when you start to awaken and realize, oh my goodness, I am hurting myself. Now, how do I pull back and reclaim my health? That feels daunting. So I think that's the struggle with this kind of information, is that we've become so entrenched in this world of mental health being associated with medicine that it's too hard to hear that we could be wrong. 805-781-3875. Hi, you're on the air.
That's the struggle with this kind of information.
Oh, can you turn down your radio, please? Because I can hear me.
Oh yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry.
Thanks
I
for
didn't
calling.
Realize- be that quickly.
That's all right.
I just kind of wanted to share a story.
Okay.
For me, I probably was depressed when I was younger and didn't realize it. And there was no help with it. You know, they were like, oh, just, you know, snap out of it kind of thing. And then my daughter was depressed. And then I found out how depressed my grandmother was and then my dad's sister. And I sort of thought, well, okay, I don't have to do that. But it sneaked up on me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was outside things. I lost a girlfriend, 40-some-odd years. I've lost animals, that kind of stuff. And so I tried antidepressants, but they just either made me sick, really, you know, sick feeling, or just, you know, after 6 or 7 weeks, it didn't do anything. So I thought, okay. I know lifestyle has to change, but I eventually, right now I'm working with a cognitive therapist, and I also have a psychiatrist, and I also have a regular doctor, and I've added things to my diet more. I do exercise. I go to the gym usually twice a week, sometimes more, but that's pretty much 2 times a week. But I just wanted to reaffirm that there isn't one road for everyone.
No.
And it is very shameful. I mean, you don't talk about it. It was hard for me to come on here and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I want other people to know there are some people who, you know, their family's going to shun them. I'm very lucky that it's not what's happened to me. But it's really hard to go through your life knowing, okay, today, am I going to make it? Mm-hmm. Am I going to make it through the day? Am I going to be able to get up and function? Can I work? I try to eat really well. All those things, and I feel like sometimes I'm like this island, mm-hmm. and I have to be an actress, mm-hmm. because it's very hard on people that you're around.
Well, so. and I think that that's what drew me to the conversation today, because when Dr. Brogan appeals her story to women and women's experience with mental health, because I think for women there is a different emotional experience in life. We're the carriers uh-huh. of the emotions of our family. We're the carriers of the well-being of our family, you know, and that's a lot of stress and pressure, and we're supposed Absolutely. To be able to hold it all together and hold everyone together, just as men feel the stress and pressure quite often economically to hold it all together. And, you know, so I think as individuals, we've been, again, the story of we all should be feeling good all the time. And so if I'm the one person who's not feeling good, I better keep my mouth shut. But what's universally healing, and I think as a therapist you find this, when people talk about it out loud and they realize they're not the only one, that the person sitting next to them on the bus, that the person sitting next to them at work has their daily struggles, has their daily trials, that it makes ours less burdensome. And I think that's what we need to understand, is that there is for many people, our temperament is our temperament. And so how do we find a lifestyle that suits our temperament instead of saying, I need to figure out how I can change to fit what society wants me to be? And I think that's the big struggle, is that for many people, the craziness of their schedule, the craziness of their life, or the craziness of our Western culture doesn't suit their temperament, but they end up feeling like they're sick instead of saying, I think society's sick and I need to find a lifestyle that suits my temperament.
Yes, I agree with you.
Thank you for calling in today, and I know it took a lot of courage. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hi, Anne, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was driving home and listening to the conversation all the way. And I'm the same way with physical illness. I treat it the same way I do the mental problems. I don't take medication, period, end of story. I go in my doctor. I mean, it's like they pull out their pad and, oh, well, we've got a pill for this and I've got a pill for that. And I'm 79 years old, and I'm well aware that everybody I know is taking a lot of pills. And I go into a new doctor today, and he says, what are you taking? And I say, enalapril for blood pressure, which I wouldn't even have to take that if I would stay on my diet, but I don't. but that's it. I mean, that is totally it. And they just look at me like, what's wrong with you? I mean, seriously. And when I was much younger, I suffered from major depression. And I kept going to therapists, and they kept trying to say, well, now you need to go on an antidepressant. I knew that I was depressed because of the just horribly abusive childhood that I came out of. I wound up in a mental hospital at 14 years old and was there until 18. And what I felt that the only way that I could survive, and I still feel it, was that I was able to detach completely from everything that was going around me, and I would be kind of up in the sky looking down at everyone. Mm-hmm. And that feeling stayed with me for a long time, but when I look back at it now, I understand that that was my safety valve. Mm-hmm. That was the only way that I could survive, and that wasn't depression for me. It was survival.
Coping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, coping. And yes, therapists helped through the years. I don't know why. I've been sober in AA now for 11 years. That was another way that I began coping. But just in the last 4 to 5 years, it dawned on me one day, I'm not depressed anymore. Wow. And I have no idea why, but I knew all the way along that the pills weren't what was going to fix me, that I had to fix me in some way or another, that I was responsible, as somebody else said, I was responsible for my own behavior and feelings and so forth. So anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Anne, thank you. And you're 79, and this is the other part of my story. I think I'm sounding like my German grandmother. But, you know, so at 74, you got to start feeling great. You know, for me, it was at 50. 50, everything changed. That we think, you know, that if I do everything right, I should feel great. And, you know, we're all dealt different life stories. And that's why the medical model can't be applied to the psyche the way, you know, we apply stitches to a cut, because your history of abuse and how you responded to it and, you know, the school that you went to, all of these factors influenced how your body responded, right? Your glucose mm-hmm. level or your gut inflammation all responded to this trauma, and it was unique to you. And so you stuck with it and you lived through it, and you're getting your golden time now at 75. And as I always say to my kids, don't peak when you're young, because then it's all downhill from there, right? You want to go out on a high. And so you had to wait a long time, but you got there.
Honestly say that this, you know, I am a very low income senior, and there's times it just sucks, to put it blindly. And as I get older, you know, the arthritis kicks in, and we don't. And sometimes I think, God, this is the golden years. I'm sorry, but I hope not. But mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and every other way, I am far, far better than I have ever been in my entire life. And I don't know why or what happened, other than I did stop drinking, which is a depressant.
Absolutely. And I am so happy for you.
Anyway, thank you for the conversation. It was great today.
Thanks for calling in. And as we wrap up today, one of the things I didn't touch on was, you know, as I was researching for this week, I came across an article in the Washington Post, if you're interested in it. It talked about opiates and anti-anxiety medications in women, because, again, as I opened the show with, women are diagnosed 5 times more often than men for any sort of mental health concern. It's because we're more expressive, we're more emotive, we feel things deeply. We talk about them. Men go undiagnosed, probably, frankly, because they're taught to stuff things down. But that also prevents men from being put on medication at the rate that women are. If you're curious about what I've talked about today, look at Kelly Brogan's book. And I'm not saying it's the Bible. I'm saying it's another perspective. It's more information. And she has a lot of research in the back of that she studied to put this together. And one of the things that she talks about is that, you know, you have a higher rate of recurrence of major depression if you've medicated it than if you go through major depression unmedicated, because your body learns how to heal the symptoms of the major depression. If you medicate it, your body never learns how to respond and resist. But this article about the opiates in the Washington Post talked about, and actually it was based in Bakersfield, it talked about the Central Valley, that between 1999 and 2014, the number of white women dying annually from opiate overdoses has increased 400%, according to the Center for Disease Control. And what we're seeing is this epidemic of tandem use of opiates for pain control, along with benzos, anti-anxiety drugs known as benzos, and the two of them together are a deadly combination. And so we're seeing that while the death rates in many demographics are dropping in certain areas, the death rate of overdose, primarily from opiates and anti-anxiety medications, has risen in white women. And so we're seeing it's a lifestyle issue, that if you're a white middle class or upper class woman who has access to good health care, that good health care, if you go in with a complaint, is probably going to include some sort of medication. And look at the results. We're seeing an increase in the death rates of these women who have access to medical care. So I'll leave you with that. A Mind of Your Own is Kelly Brogan's book. This article in the Washington Post, you can Google it. Just write anxiety, opiates, and women, and you'll see that. Do your own research. Look at the nutrition plant-based diets or at a moderate balanced diet. Try different things. You have to exercise. You have to meditate. You have to change your environment. You have to get the toxins out. You have to get everything that has a smell out of your house. You have to be willing to do the work to have this lifestyle change work for you, or the medications are going to probably be your best alternative, because no one can self-heal without the work of self-healing. And this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or you can podcast our shows at iTunes. You can find me at our Facebook page or to Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com. As always, I appreciate you supporting the show and supporting public radio, KCBX. I'll be back next Tuesday.
Facebook.